Everybody, I'm Bailey.
I'm Drew.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. I was about to say, because this is part three of Rodney Acala, I never wrote up like a little like synopsis paragraph for myself.
Oh, I feel like we remember.
Okay.
He's just killed a bunch of people and
there was a trial.
Yes, there was a trial that ended in the death penalty for him. After a couple appeals, it was overturned. By the Supreme Court of California in August of 1984. So we ended with him needing to go back on trial, essentially.
Good.
Just to remind everyone, because he has had, he's been to prison multiple times and had trials before, this is for the kidnapping and murder of Robin Samsu, I think her name is. Little 12-year-old girl he decided to kidnap and murder in the woods. Any questions, comments before we start?
I guess my only comment is that I'm very excited to no longer discuss this man.
Me too.
I don't care for him.
Yeah.
I don't like what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I really would just like him to stop.
Yeah, I fully went into this episode, like the research part of it, thinking like, oh, it'll be a quick little episode, or like just one episode.
I hate to say it, but like just another serial killer type vibes. That's what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I dug deeper and deeper, I was like, I knew none of this.
Yeah. I don't like how he doesn't seem to have like an actual
victim type.
Yes.
Yeah.
One second, please.
It's really honestly like any young girl to like, I don't think he goes higher than 30, but like I think the youngest victim we know of was 8-year-old Talia beginning.
For me, it's like any female that he feel like is available.
Real quick,
yeah.
I have a visitor that needs to say hello to you before she goes to bed.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Yep, there they are. All right, now say goodnight.
Good night.
Oh, does she have pigtails in right now?
Oh, she's got something going on. I don't know. She's got one on the top of her head and then one on the side.
Oh, I saw the side. I was like, oh, that's super cute.
It's like Dr. Right, Seuss.
Go to bed.
Right.
Good night.
She said bye?
No, I said go to bed and she said bye.
Oh.
Fair.
You know, they're going to appreciate being able to go to bed early when they're older. So
I would also like to point out to anyone listening that it is an hour and 20 minutes past her bedtime. Yeah, you think you're funny.
All right, so trial number two began April 23rd, 1986. If you remember from the first trial, the, like, key witness was, forget her first name, but she was a foresty worker that witnessed the car and what looked like, Acala and Robin in the car.
Her last name was, like, Crappa?
Yes.
Or something? Because yeah. I think that she is Crappa.
Yeah.
That's how I remembered.
So prior to the like trial beginning, she had a little meeting with like the judge and the prosecutioner and was like, I can't testify. I don't remember the events anymore. I don't really know anything.
Real quick.
Yeah.
You said prosecutioner?
Yeah.
Is that executioner and prosecutor put together?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, look out for the prosecutioner.
It feels really judgmental right now.
Yeah. Lacey's baby did not like the sound of that joke.
No.
Also,
she's really hard to please.
One of my coworkers, especially, she like says that she can speak Bailey because I do that with words all the time.
You just make up new ones?
No, I find them. Just it takes me a while to get there.
You find them. Okay. Tell us about the prosecutioner.
Well, we're going to talk about the judge. So, pretty much Judge Schwab ended up ruling that she was incapable of testifying. However, he allowed her testimony from the first trial to be read aloud in court. The second trial lasted only about 4 weeks. The jury found him guilty again, and he was sentenced to death again. So, back to Sam Quentin, he went on death row. That trial was in 86. December 31st, 1992, the Supreme Court of California affirmed his 1986 conviction and death sentence. They did acknowledge there were some minor errors that had taken place during the penalty phase of the trial, but determined that the errors were harmless and not prejudicial. And to the defendant's trial in any fashion. So they cleared it on their level. While on death row in prison, awaiting a higher level appeal, he decided to write a book, which you, Drew and Lacey are both attending to their children right now. So
I'm not. My camera is just being weird now.
Okay. Just because I really want you to absorb what he decided to title as his book.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Yeah. What did he write it?
Okay. Don't interrupt. It's a bit long. His title is, "You, the jury, are about to hear the evidence, and you have two duties: to determine the facts of the case from the evidence revealed in this trial, and not from any other source, and to apply the rule of law to the facts as you determine them, and in this way, to arrive at your verdict."
Okay, so that's not a title. That's just a list. That's like jury instructions.
Rodney thought it was a title.
Okay, Rodney might be an idiot. That's not a title.
The book, shockingly, was self-published. Because I feel any publisher, first of all, any publisher that would want to take his book, crazy. But no editor or publisher would be putting out a book with that title.
Why?
I don't know.
What's the matter with it?
He wanted, you know how they say don't judge a book by the cover?
I feel like he wanted it so you can.
Yeah. He wanted that. He wanted to kind of just cut to the chase.
Yeah, so that you knew what you were getting into.
Yeah. Because, okay. You know.
You've talked me into it.
He, in this book, he attempted to prove his innocence in the murder of Robin. He, weirdly enough, included a 71-question test in the book that the readers could take and send to him, to San Quentin. And I guess receive a grade or something?
What? Like, what kind of test? Like, an IQ test, or?
I think it was a test on the case.
When you first said that, do you remember, like, those, like, Teen Bop magazines or whatever they were called? mm-hmm. where it'd be like, find out if he really likes you or something like that.
J14. Yeah.
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 That's what I first imagined is what he was doing.
Which I feel like, not to like segue here, but like I feel like BuzzFeed quizzes are kind of like those, just like
yes. heightened
and more fun.
And more accessible.
Yeah. But like, I feel like the test thing has to do with like some kind of like power in his head, because
well, it's also a fun way to trick people into writing to him.
True. He had a reporter come interview him while he was in prison, and like going through the process of like being like, "Hey, can like I do this?" He sent that like that reporter a test too. And told her that, like, if she, like, passed it, then she could come and interview him. So, like...
He's got high standards.
Apparently.
He doesn't want just anybody coming and talking to him.
It feels like he's a tool that's just trying to make anything difficult.
What? Rania Alcala is a tool? No.
While in prison, he spent a significant amount of time reading in the library, up on case laws and researching law in general.
Researching how to properly name a book? Because I'm sure he saw a lot of normal titles there. He wasn't like, maybe mine is a little lengthy.
No, because it was perfect.
I have no words for that. I don't know what to say to that.
I'm saying he probably thought it was perfect.
I know.
Why would he need to change it?
Well, so you're probably right. He was probably sitting there thinking, they're not going to publish my book because it's me, not because it's a stupid idea. What was it even about? Did you say what it was about?
It was about him presenting the evidence in Robin's case and saying that he was innocent. Like, yeah.
Okay. I was too distracted by the title.
He and his, like, sister published it together.
Well, it's good to see that he still has family support.
Yeah. As he read more about, like, case laws, like, the law in general, he became good enough that he was an in-house lawyer to other inmates.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so, you know, it's all about rehabilitation.
Giving back and,
you know, the first, others. Like, four times he's been to prison, it didn't stick. The fifth time, definitely.
Does it stick?
I don't know.
What? Yes, you do. You did the case.
Okay, we'll see. March 2001, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals issued an unexpected reversal of Akala's conviction in the second trial, and it was once again being overturned.
That's just not fair.
Mm-hmm.
To anybody.
No.
Family, etc.
Well, like, especially the family, but also, like, you're trying this man for the third time, or, like, you might be, like, that's, like, oh. Anyway.
I know it's not, like, double jeopardy, but it feels like it should be.
Well, they addressed that after the first turnover, and the Supreme Court of California said it wouldn't fall under that.
But it should. Anyway.
Does double jeopardy work for appeals? I thought it would only work for, like, mistrial.
But you're saying that... So wait, did he file an appeal and they were like, oh, okay. Appeal granted?
So I'm pretty sure, because this is a death sentence case,
it automatically gets, like, reviewed.
Yeah. They always review them, and I mean, I'm sure he, like, I mean, I know he's appealing, and his lawyer's, like, appealing them, and, like, disputing the like trials and everything.
He's just so annoying. Just
yeah.
Die.
Like, just rot in prison, please.
Yeah, just go away.
So Akala was now 57. The state had 120 days to either retry the case or release him. He technically probably wouldn't have been released just because he also was in there for, who was it? I think her name was Miranda. Charge. Yeah. Because he had that trial, like, months after Robin's mm-hmm. first trial, where he did get sentenced. Yeah, so that was happening in 2001. In 2002, a new state law in California passed that allowed police officers and correction officers to take samples of DNA from prisoners using reasonable force if the prisoner refused it voluntarily. So this was like everyone's getting DNA swabbed and everything and like cataloged when they go to prison.
It sounds like bad news for Rodney.
Yes. The LA Cold Case Squad linked him to three other unsolved murders. They also, with the DNA now, like, being accessible and everything, mm-hmm. they found DNA on the earrings that was in his Seattle locker. They found DNA on one of the Paris earrings that belonged to Charlotte Lamb. At the same time for Charlotte, there was they linked him to her murder through the semen. A palm print was matched to Akala from a bass rail at the scene of Georgia Wickstead's murder. Jill the blood that was found on the robe at her crime scene belonged to Akala. And they matched more semen from his victims to him. So they've got him now on like three additional murders, or four. What did I say? Three.
Oh, no.
October 7th, 2003, Akala pled not guilty to the murder of Robin again. He submitted a motion to act as his own lawyer in this trial.
That's a good idea.
He felt he could help his attorney. So he still had an attorney. He just wanted the right to help represent himself with his attorney, if that makes sense. Yeah.
I think, like, even if you represent yourself, most judges will assign, like, a...
like, kind of like partner? A supervisor type thing. Yeah.
Like a someone who just kind of helps you.
Like in Legally Blonde, when Elle took over the case, she needed the fuck was his name? Luke Wilson. Yeah. His whatever character he was to supervise her.
Yeah, I don't think that's the same thing though, because she was just a law student.
Yeah, but so she still wasn't like she didn't pass the bar. She didn't have a license. So she needed, like, supervision because she was just a citizen, technically.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Because that's the reason, like, in My Cousin Vinny, like, I'm pretty sure I never actually watched that movie fully through.
Okay. But, that is my favorite movie.
But, like, he lied about passing the bar in order to represent his cousin, right?
No. He was a real lawyer.
Okay.
He just lied about his expertise because mm-hmm. so when you become a lawyer, there's like a I think it's similar to like doctors and stuff.
Yeah, like, you choose what kind of law you want to practice.
No, that's not what I'm saying. As an EMT, I'm only allowed to be an EMT in Pennsylvania unless I become a nationally registered person. In My Cousin Vinny, he was allowed to practice law in New York, not in Missouri, I think is where they were. And similarly, in the Karen Reed case, her lawyer, like the main one, had to get special permission to operate as her lawyer in Massachusetts because he's not from Massachusetts. So I don't remember the point of this. Oh, that's why he was lying, because he had to get special permission from the judge to practice law and represent his cousin.
I've only really watched like the court part of the movie, like the best part.
Okay, well, it's my favorite, so I highly recommend it.
Great.
I do a great Marissa Tomei.
Can I continue?
Yeah, absolutely. Please continue.
Okay, great. So now with that plea deal or plea and everything, his trial date was set for spring of 2005. The year before that, in 2004, they found another DNA match for the murder of Jill Barcombe.
Interesting.
His trial date was spring of 2005. It ended up getting pushed back to October because his lawyer ended up dying unexpectedly. Oh. So it pushed it back, unfortunately.
But you know, at least it wasn't he was out on bail type situation. At least he was still in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And because I have a feeling that even if he was out on bail, he would still be fucking with people.
I think he would have been gone, honestly. He would have ran.
That's true, but do you think he would have called and got permission first? Like he did that one time?
No, that was parole.
Oh, okay.
Different.
Mm-hmm.
So now with all this evidence of at least five other murders that they have linked to him, the prosecutors wanted to try all five murders in one trial. So Robin, Charlotte Lamb, Jill, Jill Barcombe, and then Georgia Wexton. They wanted to try all five. They said having them together really paints the true picture of who Akala is and gives the jury a realistic vision of how he commits his crimes.
Okay. I know that it's sometimes risky to do that, but okay.
Yeah. So November 22nd, 2005, his trial officially started. Akala is 62. He pled guilty to the four new murders. Probably wise, because he had DNA. He tried to appeal in order to be allowed to represent himself at the trial again. He wanted to serve solely instead of like as a co-counsel, if that makes sense.
Yes. He's still fighting the Robin one?
Yeah.
Oh, like at this point, just concede.
I think the Robin one, because there's that law that, because they're trying him on kidnapping too. And there was that law we talked about in the second episode that if you do a serious crime, like kidnapping, and that person dies while you have them, you are are automatically up for like the death penalty.
So, okay.
I think he was fighting that one because I don't think he had the death penalty like option on the others.
He didn't want to die. Okay, I see. Yeah. I was saying that like he's already going to be in prison for forever. Like what? Like yeah. Why? But, okay, he just doesn't want to die.
Well, because I feel like in his mind, he doesn't think, prison's probably a big deal because he's been let out so many times.
True. And, you know, he's teaching other people. He's probably having a good time.
And, like, he probably, like, he's already, like, painted himself a picture, like, to one parole board. Like, I don't think he would think that it's hard to get out, unfortunately.
Okay.
He wanted to represent himself on the theory that his lawyers were ineffective and that he could do them a much better job on his own.
I agree. Let's let him do it.
They finally allowed him to defend himself. It took like 4 years of like appeals of him pushing back and everything with this. So now we're in September of 2009 when they finally like granted him the ability to defend himself.
It could also, that all this could also just be like him trying to stall.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that happened in September 2009. Sorry, there's so many dates here. With being a lawyer and having so many appeals and pushbacks for a trial is exhausting, and I'm just researching it.
I would be exhausted if I was like the prosecution and the defense just kept filing appeals. I'd be like, guys, can we just like go to trial?
Can we just get this over with? Yeah.
Yeah, I have other things I want to do.
So January 11th, 2010, at 65 years old. Yeah.
I also don't like how recent this was.
Yeah.
I thought we... I don't know. I like it, leaving all of the really bad serial killers in the 70s. And I don't like him. Continue.
It's, yeah, it's so, like, it's so dragged out, unfortunately. At 65 years old, he was representing himself and appeared relaxed in court. Now... Good. His charges were murder during the commission of kidnapping for Robin Samso, deliberate premeditated murder with torture during the commission of a burglary, robbery, and rape of Charlotte Lamb, deliberate premeditated murder with torture during the commission of burglary, robbery, and rape of Georgia Whitstead, deliberate premeditated murder and torture of Jill Barkholm, and deliberate premeditated murder and with torture of Jill Parenteau. So those are the, even though he's said he's guilty for the last four, they still presented like evidence for all of them. Let me have some water. I'm parched.
Okay. Lacey, welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you.
I missed hearing the story. I was all thrown off a couple minutes ago when Bailey says something about 2010, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
We briefly spoke about my cousin Vinny. Mm. Bailey has not seen him. Yes. Bailey's not seen my cousin Vinny.
I've seen the major part of it.
Yeah. All right, tell us more.
Okay.
Did he finally get killed?
He's not alive anymore.
I feel like...
He probably, like, passed away peacefully in jail or something stupid. Yeah.
I was gonna say that. I feel like he probably did that, and it's really annoying. Go ahead, Bailey.
So in the trial, a detective took the stand to testify about Jill Barkholm's murder. They showed that her body was all bruised and beaten, and she fought for her life, as we see a lot with his victims. She had swollen lips, broken teeth, and 3 wounds on her forehead, so deep you could see her skull. For Charlotte Lamb, the ME testified that Charlotte also struggled and fought a long time for her life. She probably suffered in enormous amounts of pain. And she had been strangled and intentionally allowed to revive repeatedly.
Oh, so just straight up torture.
Yeah. Georgia Wexted was a victim lying on the floor beside her bed, which had been saturated with blood. She's the victim where they were able to get the fingerprint off a brass handle of her bed frame. The Emmy said quite a bit of force was used in order to crack her skull. There was a 2-inch tear in her vagina, which meant that something had penetrated her that must have been much more severe than just a penis.
You're right, Lizzie.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
So, reading through the case and everything, and again, Akal is representing himself. During these, the prosecution's witnesses testifying, his cross-examinations are very strange. He chooses to focus on, like, the earrings that they were found in his storage locker, asking witnesses, like, if they saw victims in earrings or what they were wearing the day they, like, went missing or whatnot. I think he was, like, focusing on, like, I guess trying to prove that the earrings, like, weren't attached to the victims, so he couldn't have done it. I don't know.
Maybe he was, like, trying to say, like, I just robbed them. I didn't, like, they, I don't know. Maybe he was just getting off on it.
Yeah. It was just, like, he either didn't have any questions for, like, all these witnesses that came up, or he was just asking about, like, earrings.
Maybe he also is not a professional lawyer and he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Do we think that that's a possibility? What?
Crazy. When it was when it was when the prosecution rested and it was Akala's time, he called himself to the stand. Perfect. And I feel like the way it was described in how I was researching it, it feels like an SNL skit of he would ask himself a question and then I just see him in my head, like, scurrying behind, like, to the witness stand and answering to himself.
I was going to ask if that's what he was doing. Like, yes. How does that work? Does he just monologue or does he actually have to ask questions?
The way it was, like, described in my research and, like, the main book I used was that he was doing question and answering. Like, it wasn't a monologue. Because, like, I feel like you could do a monologue or something. Because, like, I mean, it's still testimony. But, like, I don't know. Yeah.
It feels like it would be, like, a monologue would be a more direct way of just, like, you're eventually going to say it all.
Yeah.
But then the people would, or the prosecution would be able to object, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to imagine him just running back and forth.
And it was said that he was, like, on the stand and, like, doing that back and forth for about 5 hours. Which I feel like the first hour would be, like, funny and entertaining. But, like, by hour 3, it's like, what the fuck are we watching?
Yeah. And was all the questions about earrings? Like, what are we doing here?
I wonder.
Sometimes I wonder if, like, the jury can raise their hand and be like, can we not do this anymore?
Yeah.
This is lame.
So, the case rested. Deliberations began February 23rd. By the 25th, the jury came back with a verdict. They said guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of 5 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of kidnapping. March 2nd, we go into the penalty phase of his trial. Monique Hoyt, who is now 46, testified. She displayed a photo of herself after he attacked her, of her torso that was bitten aggressively by Akala. And it's really gross when they choose to testify against, or, like, choose to represent themselves, because when they have, like, victim testimony and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that.
So, like, during his cross-examine, he asked her if she remembered that he apologized to her after he raped her in his car.
Well, that makes it all better.
Yeah.
Did she remember that?
She said she looked at him and was like, or actually, no, she couldn't meet his face, but she was like, your apology is meaningless.
I really feel like there should be a rule. Like, I understand, like, it's annoying that they're allowed to represent themselves and they're like, there's a right to face their accusers, but like, they shouldn't be allowed to re-victimize people.
Yeah.
No. Talia Shapiro took the stand. She was the 8-year-old in the beginning of the story.
Like an adult?
Yeah. I mean, we're in 2010 and she was attacked at 8 years old in like 1968, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah, 1968 when she was 8, so we're in 2010. Someone do the math for me.
No. Okay. Let's just move on. She's an adult.
Yeah. She took the stand, told her story again, never uttered his name and never even like paid attention to him. She didn't even look at him. When he had the chance to cross-examine her, he said, I sincerely regret what happened and apologize for my despicable behavior. She didn't respond to him. She pretty much just stared right in his eyes, uncomfortably so, until he told the judge that he had no further questions.
Okay, but that wasn't a question.
Yeah. I guess. I don't know.
Stupid. Stupid man.
Robert, who is Robin's brother, spoke about how Robin went missing and his family was totally destroyed. He said his childhood ended as he was left to take care of his mother and the rest of the family at 13 years old.
That sucks.
Yeah. Akala only had one witness testify for him. It was a court-appointed psychiatrist who explained...
Oh, please, Mom.
No. Who explained how Akala had borderline personality disorder, and tried to, like, say this is the cause of why he, like, snapped and probably doesn't remember killing Barcombe, Wickstead, Lamb, or, Partinello, Parento, the other Jill. He then explained that the disorder is primarily characterized by profound instability in personal relationships, poor self-image, impulsivity, fear of abandonment, and radical mood swings.
Hmm. I disagree.
Yeah. It took less than an hour before the jury came back, and they gave him the same penalty of death.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And don't worry, this trial sticks. He does not get retried anymore. During the 2010 trial, another victim actually came forth. After finally being able to put a name to the monster in her past, she had a panic attack while watching the trial at home. She remembered hearing about Talia's attack back in 68, and was also able to put a face to her name. Morgan Rowan spent days writing a letter to Talia over Facebook after the trial. She apologized for not reporting him sooner, and Talia responded that there was nothing to forgive and that it wasn't Morgan's fault. Morgan's story is
I was going to say, do we know what Morgan's story is? Okay.
So Morgan met Akala when she was 13 years old in 1965, 3 years before Talia was kidnapped, in a parking lot of a teen nightclub with her friends. She recalls that he was tall, attractive, and charismatic. He laughed easily and told stories, and young girls loved him, which at the point she never realized, like, how truly like dangerous that was.
Yeah, it's a bit of a red flag, I would say.
While hanging out in this parking lot, I guess she was like trying to be like flirty or something with him. She was like lightly like scratching at his arm with her nails to get his attention. He told her to stop. When she didn't listen, he grabbed her arm and dragged her into the alley behind the club. He slammed her head into a wall and she went unconscious. She woke up feeling something on her chest, and it was a large dumpster he had pushed against her. She screamed for help, and the owner of the club and his wife came out to help. They helped her, like, ice her head, but it doesn't seem like at this point she called the cops or anything. She avoided him for the next 3 years, until August 68. Seems like her friends... He hung around, I guess, her friends. So they were, like, sort of in the same circle, but yeah.
Still a red flag.
Yeah. So August 1968, her family was actually preparing to move across the country to New York. 4 days before they were going to leave, she and her friends went out for, like, a final, like, celebration of, like, a goodbye party and everything. And Akala was amongst that group. She remembered feeling creeped out when she saw him, and he actually ended up, like, driving her and her friends around from, like, place to place for a little bit until he decided to take the group back to his house, where he offered them marijuana and put on, like, loud music for the rest of the teens to kind of chill and relax. As they were busy, he grabbed Morgan and pulled her into a bedroom and locked the door. She kept on trying to back away and get away from him until he backed her against a wall. And with the belt, with his belt wrapped around his fist, he punched her right between her eyes.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Why?
Her head hit the wall in the, like, the kind of like the motion of the punch, and she fell to her knees but was still conscious. He pulled a knife out and cut the tie of her blouse around her neck, nicking her neck a little bit. He then stuffed his belt into her mouth, bound her wrists with a necktie, and repeatedly punched her in the stomach until she felt her ribs breaking.
Jesus.
He cut off the rest of her clothes and then undressed himself and raped her. Her friends noticed that they were missing and began pounding on the door. Specifically, one of her friends, Mike, actually broke into the bedroom where they were, through a window. And at that point, Akala was covered in blood and supposedly told Mike to take her. Mike got Morgan free and she just kind of like ran right out of the house. Only in her ripped blouse. She ran into the street, followed by her friends, nearly getting hit by a car with a couple inside. They stopped, they got her in the car, and they took her friends, too, and drove them away. Mike took care of Morgan at his apartment. His neighbor was a nurse who provided first aid care. And she stayed at Mike's until she was due back at her parents', before they left for New York. Morgan was traumatized for a long time afterwards. She said she slept next to her parents' bed after moving, and she never really told them what happened.
Okay, but, like, all of her friends kind of saw what happened.
Yeah.
So... she shouldn't be blaming herself for everything Rodney did, because it wasn't her. It wasn't. There were a lot of other witnesses who could have come forward, so she shouldn't be the only one feeling to blame.
Yeah. There's a bit of a happier ending for her.
Okay, good. But remember how we were saying bystanders were doing really good? I disagree now.
Yeah. While she was in New York later on, like a couple months later, a friend actually mailed her a newspaper clipping, about Akala's rape and attempted murder of Talia. Which this whole, like, rape of Morgan and like altercation that happened in what was it? What did I say? September? No, August of 1968, just a month before he attacked Talia. So I know we spoke about like how like it was like weird that he had that much confidence to just take an 8-year-old and like bring her back to his place. This kind of proving that like she was definitely not his first.
He also showed a lot of confidence in just like he took Morgan while there were other people in the house.
Yeah.
That's very bold.
That and 3 years later, like he may not have like full like to the, his extent like attacked her, but like he still assaulted her, so he's
not great.
Yeah. In 2012, he was extradited to New York for the 1971 murder of Cordelia Crilly and the 1977 murder of Ellen Hoover. He pled guilty to those and was sentenced to 25 years to life and was sent right back to San Quentin. In September 2016, over 100 photos were posted of possible victims or people that he just had photographs of, kind of just in hopes of them finding more victims. Sorry, my notes repeated themselves here.
How's the baby, Lacey?
We got her down to sleep. A little bit ago, I heard her fussing a little bit and then it stopped. So either he got her to go back to sleep or he's just entertaining her at the moment.
So after they released the photos, they actually were able to identify at least one victim from them. 28-year-old Christine Ruth Thornton disappeared back in 1977. Christine was believed to be traveling west with her boyfriend at the time. And her sister reported that the relationship was like very toxic. He was abusive. The last communication they had with Christine before she was never heard of again was that she was pregnant. And then she just kind of disappeared. Her body was found in Sweetwater County, Wyoming in 1982. She was kind of their version of Jane Doe, but they said Granger Greta, because it was in Sweetwater County, but it was Granger, Wyoming. She was found in a desolate area, and they were unable to identify the victim. They assumed that she was out there for like 5 to 6 years, but her skeleton had been like eaten away at by a lot of scavenging. The body at the time was determined to be between 25 and 35 years old, and they approximated that she was 6 months pregnant. After the photo was released, and there was a 48 hours episode on him too around this time, where Christine's would have been her nephew saw. Christine's sister submitted her DNA, and they got a positive match with Christine's skeleton and her sister through mitochondria DNA. After they got this match, two detectives from Wyoming flew out to California, and they discovered that Akala had moved from San Quentin to the medical unit in a prison outside of Fresno.
Why?
He wasn't doing well. He was said to have borderline dementia. They questioned him about Christine's murder, They showed him photos of the crime scene, and they said it took him 2 seconds to look at the photo and say, "I know that area. That's my area." The detective said it almost clicked, like, with him. Like, you could almost tell that he was reliving that day. Creepily enough, they said Akala traced the body, her body in the photo for about like 5 minutes, set the photograph down flat on the table, and then started tapping the table louder and louder while he just stared back at the detectives.
Why is he allowed to look at photos?
Don't know.
Why is he allowed to do anything?
Maybe with his like advanced age, maybe they're hoping it would like recall more, or like he would admit it. I don't know.
Okay, but like he's tracing her body for 5 minutes. I don't think he's recalling anything. I think he's reliving it and having a really good time.
Yeah.
Gross.
Rodney being Rodney, he admitted to taking the photo of her when she was alive, but not killing her.
Well, of course not.
Yeah. They charged him with first-degree murder, but Wyoming decided not to extradite him. They essentially were like, he can be left to rot in a hospital bed for all we care. Like, we don't need to give him a trip to Wyoming to do this.
They're a beautiful town.
A beautiful state.
Yes.
That's
a good point.
Yeah. He has been suspected in other murders in LA, Marin County, California, Seattle, New York, New Hampshire, and Arizona. They think based on his like pattern, and I guess like how, I mean, if you want to call it efficiency, his victim count, his true victim count is like close to the hundreds or even in the hundreds, which, I mean, we don't really know when he started, and I could probably see that. They might not all be like dead, but
yeah.
July 24th, 2021, Akala died of natural causes at 77 years old.
Boo.
Stupid.
Tyla said, the planet is a better place without him, and that's for sure. Morgan said that she cried at first. I always thought when he died, I would laugh and sing, you know? It was never more real to me than that day. I couldn't stop thinking about all the darkness and all the pain he brought into the world. When evil touches you, it changes you, but evil will never own you. I try very hard to live that way, that I just will not let evil own me or change my decisions. After that first little like chat on Facebook, Morgan and Talia met up and they became very close. They actually live only a couple hours away from each other and meet up every couple of months. They've really bonded and honestly became like sisters, and they never talk about Akala.
Good.
And that's the end.
Thank God.
What a crappy person.
That is an excellent way to put that.
Good deduction, Lacey.
Yes.
It, like, I get the whole thing about, like, rather, like, 10 guilty men go free than, like, one innocent, like, be, like, put to death or, like, whatever. But, like, we know what he did. Can he not die from natural causes?
Right.
Like,
it's not like it was all circumstantial evidence or something.
Right.
It's like when I have cases like this where they're like on death row and they're outliving sometimes all of their victims.
Yeah.
Like, combined. Like,
stupid.
It's just, it's not fair.
No. It's annoying how long death row takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
We hope you keep listening.